Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, July 1st, 2018. This is episode 1502. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Oh, yeah. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. We talk about smart watches. We talk about, smart watches. There's a big category. We talk about augmented reality. Yeah. We talk about anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you want to join the conversation on this show, just call that number. Outside the U.S. And Canada, you can still call. I love getting calls from all over the world. Thanks to the internet, we get them. All you have to do is use Skype out or some sort of solution like that. And since it's a toll-free number in the U.S., shouldn't cost you anything. Our website is techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. That's free, no sign-up. You can just go there, and if you hear me talk about something on the show, you can just get the link or whatever there, techguylabs.com. Some good news, I think, from the same agency that brought us the internet, DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA. It's a arm of the Department of Defense, but it's always been kind of a blue sky research and development arm. And recently, Congress added $150 million a year to something called the Electronics Resurgence Initiative. Over the next 5 years, $1.5 billion. And DARPA is going to use some of that money, they announced this week, to do something I think quite interesting, to fund a research project to open source tools to make chips. So right now we're in a situation where it's very expensive to design a computer chip. Intel and AMD and Apple does some. There's chips based on the ARM processor made by companies like Samsung and Qualcomm. These companies may spend as much as $500 million to create a system on a chip, a new processor for your computer or your phone. $500 million, very expensive. But I love the idea. The DARPA, the federal government, will fund this research to create tools that will let anybody create their own chips, processors. If it succeeds, it could completely open the door for people anywhere to make their own systems on a chip. I think this is a very smart idea. And, it'll probably take a decade before we see the results. But, we've learned that relying on Intel, Apple's learned this, is not necessarily the best thing to do for innovation in this country. Intel has been slow to bring innovations to market, and they've unfortunately depended on an innovation they created in 1995 called speculative execution to speed up their chips, and it turns out it has vast security flaws that are now being discovered. An open source chip project, I think, would be very interesting. So I'm glad about that. That's the good news. The bad news, and it's not a law yet. It's probably not going to be. I hope it's not going to become a law. But yesterday, Thomas Massey of the House of Representatives introduced H.R. 6264, it's got a great name, the Restoring America's Leadership in Innovation Act. But it has a completely flawed premise. They want to abolish the ability to go to the patent office and say, hey, I don't think that patent was a good patent. I want you to review it. And as of right now, there is something called the Inter Partes Review, which allows you to do exactly that. And I'll tell you why I'm kind of aware of this and interested in this. I'm a podcaster. You've heard podcasts. Aren't they great? Well, there was a company out of Texas. We call them There's different names for them. NPE is the kind of bland name, non-practicing entity, a company that buys patents but doesn't actually make anything with them and uses them to make money by charging companies for the right to use the patent. There's another name for that that's maybe a little less polite, patent trolls, companies that make money by going around demanding payments for the right to do things that they probably shouldn't get the right to do. In this case, it was a company that said, well, we invented podcasting back in the 80s. They didn't. They invented a way to automatically create a playlist for cassettes, but that but they patented it, and they claimed that patent gave them the rights to go to every podcaster and demand royalties. They asked my company for more than $2 million, I can't remember. It was very scary. This is how patent trolls work, because generally what they do is they come to you and say, give us some money. You can fight them, but that means you'll see them in court. And most podcasters especially don't have the resources to do that. So they hand over the dough. Unfortunately, this company went after a couple of podcasters who had a little bit deeper pockets and got the attention of something called the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF. And EFF went to the patent office using this inter partes review and said, hey, patent office, I know you granted this patent back in the 80s. Does it apply to podcasting? And the patent office said no. And the whole thing went away, saving people a lot of money. There are many similar ones. You might get a demand letter if you have a photocopier machine in your office. There's very famous patent trolls been going around demanding payments because you're using a photocopier and they claim the rights to it. And it works because most companies see the mistake that this company made when they came to us is asking for so much money. You have to ask for just a little money so that fighting it in court would cost so much more that you go, well, I'll give you the $50,000. All right, I'm not going to pay $1 million to defend this. And then they build up a bigger and a bigger, little kitty, and then they can go after bigger and bigger companies. They made a mistake, I guess, in this case. And it was because this inter partes review exists. This patent law allows companies to go to the patent office and say, and the patent office sometimes is a little sloppy with patents, especially software patents. There's even a debate about whether you should be able to patent software. That's a relatively new thing. And so the ability to go back to the patent office and say, can you look at that again, saves us. This proposed law, and I hope you will write your member of Congress and say, because I don't know if they pay that much attention. But we do. And write your member of Congress, say, this H.R. 6264 is a bad idea. This will just facilitate patent trolls. And that's not going to foster American innovation. That is not going to do what you say your law will do, the Restoring America's Leadership and Innovation Act. Not in the least. It's quite the opposite. So keep that in mind. If you like podcasts or if you like using a photocopier, things like that, you might want to keep in mind that's not such a good idea. What else is going on? Comcast had an outage. Two fiber lines cut at the same time. That was weird. See, they say, oh, it's just a coincidence. And it makes me wonder when you get same day, same time, two fiber optic lines in different parts of the country get cut. And Microsoft's working on something called Project Andromeda that looks very interesting, a pocketable surface running Windows. It's the size of a smartphone, but you open it up and the screen goes across the hinge. So it's a screen that's 10 inches like an iPad. The Andromeda Project, not out yet. It's more than a rumor, but there have been pictures and so forth. I think it'd be very interesting. I want to encourage them to do this. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. I'd love to hear from you if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. You want to talk high tech? You want some help? A little hand holding on the information superhighway, as we used to call it. 8888 Ask Leo. 8888 Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. Kim Schaffer's there answering the phones, and we'll get to your calls right after this. Proposition 7, It has not yet qualified. I don't know. Passed the assembly. Oh, I guess it doesn't have to qualify because it came from the assembly. Add to Section 86808 to the government code and repeal Sections 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 of the Daylight Saving Time Act, an initiative approved at November 8, 1949, special election relating to Daylight Saving Time. Yeah, it would repeal Daylight Saving Time. But the voters have to approve it. Wow. Approved June 28th. So, yeah, it'll be on the ballot. Prop 7. Repeal Daylight Saving Time. I'm all for it. Boy, that'd be amazing. You have to stay on daylight time. You can't stay on saving time. That's what happened in Florida. They voted to stay on daylight saving time, but that's not legal. That would change their time zone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Girl, when you call, you'll get Kim Schaffer. Hi, Kim Schaffer, sitting in radio corner. That's what we call it, because you have a big old transmitter behind you. Good news, though, it's not on, so...
Oh, your health is. Would that be bad? Would that be a cancer risk?
Maybe. I don't know. Those things, there's a lot of power in there.
Shouldn't sit that close to a transmitter.
You know, I began my career at a radio station where the transmitter was right in front of me.
Uh-huh.
Sat there hours a day. I'm, you know, I still had children. They're a little weird, but I had them.
I've been sitting in places like what I'm looking at right now with screens around me for years. So yeah. I don't know. I think there's no hope, really.
So did you see, I've been looking at the ballot proposition. We're in the state of California.
We are.
And as of the end of the month, you know, June 28th, I think, Friday, all of the ballot propositions had to either be approved or disapproved. It was the last day. And I just noticed that there is a proposition on the state of California ballot for November, Proposition 7, that would repeal daylight saving time.
Yeah, I think I had heard a little bit about that.
I like that. What do you think?
I'm fine. I don't care which time zone.
Just not
it is.
Change.
Just,
no, don't change.
No changes. Just leave it alone.
You have to, because it's a federal law, the time zones are federal.
Uh-huh.
So you can't say we want to be in a different time zone. That would have to get congressional approval. Federal Congress would have to approve that. But you can say we don't want to change the time.
Yeah, that would be totally
in the summer.
Fine.
We don't want summertime. So it would be 10:22 right now, our time, instead of 11:22.
That's fine. So what is that? Is it going to get darker earlier or
It'll get darker earlier. But not that. I mean, hey, now we're in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, because right now
it's like 8 or 9 p.m. Yeah. when it gets dark.
Yeah, I was out waiting for fireworks last night at 9 and they can't do it till 9:30 because it doesn't get dark.
So
enough,
that would make it 8:30.
8:30 is okay. Do the fireworks at 8:30.
Sun would come up earlier, but you don't care about that.
No, not usually.
I like this. I would love to see this. Daylight saving time is actually relatively recent. It was only in the 60s it became nationwide.
It was a farm thing, right?
Yeah, and farmers, now this will be a good test because California, as you know, is agricultural. Right. Farmers don't like it either. They still have to get up at the same time to milk. Cows don't know about daylight saving time, apparently.
The cows.
Don't know how that, they didn't get the memo. So they still have to get up at the same time, milk the cows and all of that stuff. I think it's a good idea, keep it the same. We know that there are more accidents on the Monday after daylight saving time. We know that there's more heart attacks. It's stressful. You don't get as much sleep.
Because this is the one that we lose the hour.
Well,
we
any time change isn't good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always have
losing an hour is really losing. Bad. Yeah. Yeah, that's spring forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't like to lose an hour.
I don't want that.
No. I don't mind falling back.
I don't mind falling back at all. When I was getting up to go to a radio station in the city to be there at 5 a.m., I was so happy when we fell back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think a lone crusade, but every time the time changes, I rail on and on about what a bad idea it is. So I'm glad to see maybe the state of California will follow the suit of, I think Arizona and Hawaii don't do it. I think we should not do it.
Yep. I would vote for it.
Yay.
Yay.
I'm already campaigning. Does this mean we have to give equal time to the daylight saving time contingent?
No.
Well, Leo, you're wrong. You need to set the clocks forward.
The radio station has to. I don't think.
I don't think there's anybody has to. I think that's all gone too. So you've been answering the phones, slaving. Yes. See, you had to come in extra early.
Extra early.
Slaving over a hot phone, and you've come up with some calls for us.
Yeah,
I hope.
Jim in Lakewood, Colorado, just got a new car, and he's having a hard time pairing with the Bluetooth, and he's dealt with the dealers, and they haven't been able to give him any help, and so he was going to see if you had any ideas.
Yeah, this is kind of a famous.
He's like, it doesn't have the 3-millimeter jack, so that's not even an option. He has to do Bluetooth.
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Brand new car, huh? What'd you get?
Honda CRV.
Nice.
Going back and forth to work. Yeah, but a nice car.
Does Honda, I think Hondas have the CarPlay and the Android Auto, right?
Yes. The pairing works great with my iPhones, my wife's and my iPhone. But when I want to pair it with a MP3 player, and I've purchased 4 of them, different ones.
Returned
them all because they don't pair with the Honda, but they'll pair with my other car or my friend's car. So, and I've taken a car into the dealership and had them try to do it, and they said it's a problem and to call the customer support. And I called the customer support with the problem. We tried to do it there. And
that's interesting. That
they said that a Honda isn't too good in their entertainment.
that's the excuse. We don't know how to do it. It's their fault. So there are, when you pair via Bluetooth, there are different, we call them profiles that you use. When you have a Bluetooth headset, you know, for phone calls, it uses a headset profile. When you want to play music, it uses a stereo profile. There's a couple of them, but the most common, probably the one supported by your Honda, is A2DP.
Yes. I'm suspicious that that's the problem.
Can you play music from your phone through the Honda?
Yes.
Do you have to connect it to the CarPlay, or can you play it through Bluetooth?
I believe you can play it through the phone, which would mean us using Bluetooth.
Yeah, if you can play it without any wire connection, and it's stereo full quality, then it supports A2DP. Or, you know, there are later Bluetooth profiles that it might, but the advanced A2 is Advanced Audio Distribution Profile, and that's designed for audio, for music streaming. It's stereo. It has higher quality than the headset profile. It sounds like there's an incompatibility in Honda's A2DP implementation. It's not standard because you're able to pair that MP3 player to other devices, including your other car.
Exactly. Yes.
So, you know, it may be that the company you went to, the third party that you went to, was right when they said Honda doesn't do this too well. What it would mean is they don't properly implement the A2DP profile. Is anybody in the chat room have experience? This is just that Bluetooth stinks, but this one is pretty well known, and most cars will pair with any A2DP compatible Bluetooth device. As long as your MP3 player supports A2DP, your car ought to. And it sounds like Honda's doing something odd. Let me look into it and see if I can figure it out for you. Meanwhile, CarPlay doesn't let you use an MP3 player, but at least you can use CarPlay to play music from your iPhone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, they're not going to be able to set the clock ahead permanently. This would eliminate the change in the summer. We'd stay on standard time. So anybody have a CRV and a 2018 Honda CRV and able to pair it to their support? Yeah. He has to update his software. Where Mike B on the car or on the MP3 player? Mike B says, Jim, that it's a software update. The device setting signal has limited. Okay, on the car. So Mike B says, and your Honda dealer may be required to do this, that you need to update the car's the car multimedia player software. Mike, where are you getting that from? Oh, you have a 2018 Accord. Okay. Did you, Mike, did you update your Accord's software? Was that required to work with A2DP properly? So Mike says that, yeah, he had to update it. So, and we'll put this link in the show notes, Jim. Owners.honda.car.com. And now this is the this is for your Accord, but I imagine the CRV would have a similar thing. How to update the display audio software wirelessly. You don't have to, oh, good news, you don't have to go to the dealer. You need to be on Wi-Fi. So you'll go into your settings on your head end unit, you know, your stereo, and you want to update via Wi-Fi. So first you'll need to get on the Wi-Fi at your house, and then they'll push a Wi-Fi update. You can also use USB. Okay. So we'll put, I'll tell you what, Jim, we'll put the links that Mike B's passing along in our show notes. That sounds like that is a Honda-specific issue. Now, he has an Accord, but I bet you it's the same as with the CRV. I'm surprised that the dealer didn't know this. Yeah, so you want to maybe park in the garage or real close to the house so you can get the Wi-Fi connection to your house. That's interesting. Thank you, guys. You guys are good. There is no problem you cannot solve. Jim called, last call before the break, has a new, brand new 2018 Honda CR-V. Can't pair his Bluetooth player to it. And my suspicion was that it wasn't up to date in its Bluetooth profiles. You know, there are a ton of Bluetooth profiles. All different things that Bluetooth can do. Mike B. in our chat room has a 2018 Honda Accord. He had a similar problem. And he said, you can update it. He updated his. So you don't have to bring it to the dealer anymore to update the firmware in your Honda entertainment system. You can do it on a couple of ways. On Wi-Fi, if you can, you know, get it close enough to your house or park it in the garage where you can get Wi-Fi, you can join the Wi-Fi signal, and then you'll get an update. Or you can do it via USB. We'll put a link in the show notes at techilabs.com to Honda's description of how to do this. And he says it fixed it for him. So there you go. See, the chat room is so great. There's not a question they can't answer. When you call this show, you're not just calling me. You're calling a vast team. I call it Team Tech Guy to help you with your questions. I was looking through Wikipedia. Has a list of Bluetooth profiles. And, of course, the most common one is the headset profile that allows you to, HSP, that allows you to connect to a Bluetooth, you know, phone device. And then the second most common, maybe more common now than ever, the Advanced Audio Distribution Profile, or A2DP, lets you connect to stereo speakers, high-quality speakers for music player. But there's a bunch more. ATT, the Attribute Profile. AVRCP, the Audio Video Remote Control Profile. So it's like a Bluetooth remote. The Basic Imaging Profile, so you could send images via Bluetooth, BIP. There's BPP, does printing. CIP, which lets you access ISDN, which is kind of an old-school phone line technology. There's the cordless telephony profile, the device ID profile, the dial-up networking profile, fax profile. Yes, you can fax by Bluetooth. File transfer, generic video audio distribution, GAVDP. That's actually used with A2DP. In fact, it may be the place that you're having problems, Jim, because clearly you support A2DP, but it may be that the underlying, I love saying this, GAVDP is not properly configured. There's the generic access profile, the generic attribute profile, the generic object exchange profile. I'm just at the G's. It goes on and on and on. So Bluetooth can do a lot of things, none of them well. They keep updating Bluetooth, and it doesn't seem to get any better. So much so that Apple actually modified Bluetooth for its iPhone and for its AirPods, the headset, the wireless headsets that they make. And they put a dedicated chip in there and all sorts of stuff. And it does make it better, actually. So maybe there's some room for improvement. I hope that helps, Jim. See if you can get an update. Meanwhile, we got Marshall in Des Moines, Iowa on the line. Hi, Marshall.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm upgraded to a iOS 12 public beta.
Oh, you did that, did you? You did that, did you? Okay.
So what I ran into is I turned off my CarPlay back before I updated, and now I can't find the restriction area to turn that all back on. It's no longer under the general like it used to be, and I'm just wondering if anybody...
So you want to re-enable CarPlay? Is that it?
Yeah, and that's under restrictions where you can turn off, like, app purchases and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a handy little tip that, frankly, is not immediately obvious. But if you go to settings, up at the top, there's a little search. And you can type in CarPlay, for instance, and go to the parts of the settings where CarPlay can be controlled. It's in general now, it looks like, general CarPlay. I'm on iOS 12 as well. Now, I have to warn you that anybody listening, going to iOS really isn't recommended for your main device because it's buggy. Do you notice, for instance, when you first start up, Marshall, that it seems to, like, hang for a while, just sit there and not be able to do anything?
Yeah, I'm not so, I mean, I as long as it works, you know, I can always back, you know, start from a backup that I've done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I understand the curiosity. It won't be out till September. Just, you know, remember when you're using, and it is a public beta now for iOS, iOS 12, and Mojave for macOS is also available in public beta. They don't do public betas for watchOS, mostly because as easy it is to go back to the iOS 11 on your iPhone, it's almost impossible on an Apple Watch. So they don't let people try Apple Watch software ahead of time. So, yeah.
Another question about Siri and voice commands.
Sure.
I don't know if you remember back in the day when computer Apples, you could just change the name that you called the computer and then have it launch anything on the make things speakable. You've said that, like, Siri is too complicated for, like, the chips that they're giving these things. But I've wrote Apple before and says, why don't you take it back to your old voice command, that plain talk standard?
Yeah. So Siri actually, on the iPhone, for instance, has really a lot of processor power, right? The iPhone is a desktop-class processor. So you can't really say, you could say that in a standalone device, but Apple doesn't make a lot of those. They make the HomePod. And actually, the HomePod has an iPhone processor in it, too. I think it's got the, I can't remember if it's the iPhone 6 or the iPhone 7. I think it's the iPhone 7's processor in it, the A11. So even the HomePod has a lot of capability. It is the case with the Amazon Echo. You know, you get four choices of trigger words on the Echo. But Siri doesn't let you change the trigger word at all. And it's too bad because, frankly, it triggers all the time. So... I was listening to a book the other day, and the guy said something like, hey, seriously, what time is it? And the book, and Siri triggered and started to say what time it is. This morning, I'm watching the World Cup, and for some reason, because I have a HomePod in the kitchen, it's off in the corner, it just starts mumbling. Because it's not very loud. Because I can hear Siri talking in the background, and all you do is you go, shut up!
Yeah, because I had the old 100 and that first dual processor Apple had, and that was capable of voice commands where you could launch apps with your voice, time, jokes. And I was like, it'd be nice if Apple just went back to that offline standard versus Siri.
Yeah, no, they could do it. You've got enough memory and processor power on almost all the existing Siri devices, except for maybe a really old phone, that there's no reason that they couldn't make Siri better. You know, that's one issue with using Apple stuff. You don't really, there's not really many options. It's Apple's way or the highway. So I'll register your note. I'll make sure when next time I'm having coffee with Tim Cook, I'll tell him.
I emailed him.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing to do. Yeah, email him. And actually, if you email the CEO of almost any company, but certainly Apple, they have a large group, the Office of the Executive, that reads all the email and often responds. So it's actually possible on some of these big companies that really care about customers to directly talk to them. Are you blind? Is that why you use this?
No, I just always found it handy back in the day when you could just walk up, have the computer listen, and say, hey, computer, what time is it? Computer, launch this app. So you didn't have to be in contact
with
the computer.
Yeah, I think we're getting there.
You need the internet.
Yeah, you're getting there. But yeah, the ability to do offline processing, I think they just don't want to build that in. There are other reasons, too. They want to collect information about how you use Siri, and they do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, Michael Cozio, our musical director, spinning some great discs today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Joel in Lompoc, California is next. Hello, Joel.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, welcome.
Can you hear me? Thank you. I have a question regarding my phone. What I do with my computer is every other month or so, I take my laptop, I completely reformat it. I have all my programs saved in an install directory. I install the operating system and I reinstall the programs. And of course, I backed up my data and I copy my data back.
Yeah. And you do that. Why do you do that? I think it's a good idea, but...
Because, I've listened to you for a long time, and you tell people, how to repair their computers and stuff. And you say, well, in the end, the easiest way to do it is just reformat and start over.
Yeah.
That wipes all the...
From time to time. Yeah. Plus, there's the advantage, and I hope you do this, of not installing everything that you had on it before. Like just, using
exactly.
this as an opportunity. Yeah. Pare it down a little. Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly what I do, because then I built up all these other things I've installed, and I say, I don't really need that. So I only install what I need as I go.
That's nice. Yeah.
So my question is, does the phone, I have a Samsung Galaxy S5. Yes, it's an old phone, I know, but I'm not paying $1,000 for a new phone right now.
I don't blame you.
And I don't know if the phone can do that kind of thing without, going to the cloud or whatever stuff they have. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So it also depends on how much free time you have, but I think it's a salutary thing to do every once in a while to refresh your PC by erasing and starting over. And you've got it kind of down to a science, so it's not as big a deal for you. I'm not sure I do it every 6 months, but I probably do the same thing, maybe even more often. And what it does give you is the freedom to install stuff a little bit more freely, right? Because you could try stuff, and you're going to have a clean install in a few months anyway, and then just not reinstall the stuff you don't like. The phone is a little bit more challenging, in some ways, and in some ways not. So it depends on what you want to keep. The hard thing on a phone is to back up personal data. But most of the time what's on your phone, text messages and pictures, maybe some music, most of that time you're getting, I think you might lose text messages, but you probably already backing up your pictures on a Samsung or any Android device. You can use either the Samsung Gallery or I recommend Google's Photos, and that'll automatically back up all your photos. So you won't lose anything there. And music, you probably synced that over from a PC. You can just recopy it. So it's very easy to wipe it because all phones have a kind of factory reset capability. It's actually explicitly labeled that on Android phones. On Apple, you have to kind of go in and... But the idea of starting your phone from scratch, totally doable on your S5. What you probably want to do before you do it is turn on, first of all, create, if you haven't already, a Samsung account. And then, of course, you have a Google account. And then go into the settings. It's under backup. I think it's backup and reset. Same place you're going to erase the phone. And turn on, make sure you've got turned on the Google backup. And you might even want to explicitly say, back it up now. What that's going to back up is the names of the apps you have. And what it does not do is back up the actual app. And truthfully, you don't want to do that. Once you erase the phone, you're going to restore the apps. And it's going to download fresh copies. And you probably want to do that too, because they'll be updated most likely. So in a way, yeah, you totally can do that with an S5. The question is, do you need to do that? I'm going to say, unless you have noticed a problem, probably not. I mean, there's no reason not to do it. You're not going to wear out the phone by doing that. It's just a lot of work. I do this all the time. I'm setting up new Android phones all the time. Another thing you that you might want to do, depending on the launcher you're using on an Android phone, is save your setup. This is something that Apple does, but kind of intermittently. They actually have gotten better at it in the latest versions of iOS. But on the Android device, you probably spent some time organizing your desktop, you know, putting on widgets and saying where the apps are and what folders and so forth. You'd like to save that. And it depends on the launcher you're using. Some launchers, you can't save it. I can't remember if Samsung's TouchWiz launcher will let you save the desktop configuration. I'm betting it won't. But there are a lot of third-party launchers like Nova Launcher, Active Desktop, that do let you do that. So I think that would be the one kind of pain in the butt, because you can easily download all the apps. In fact, you can even go to the Google Play Store and go through all the apps you purchased. In fact, it's a really good opportunity. I use this periodically to clear out apps that are on that list, because it keeps track of everything you've downloaded from the store. To delete ones that I no longer, you know, make sense to download. And then I can quickly re-download all the apps I have ever downloaded. So that's also easy. I just would say save your desktop settings. And if the TouchWiz launcher that you're using on the S5 doesn't save that, and I'm almost certain it doesn't, although that might be one reason to turn on Samsung Backup and check, then you'll want to use a third-party launcher. Nova Launcher is very good. I think the new Google Pixel launcher will save your settings. Check and see if you can back up your desktop settings. That's a very nice thing to be able to do. On line four, we've got Mark Myrtle Beach. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Good to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I spoke to you before about Alexa. Well, I'm sorry, the Echo device.
Hey, that's good. Nice catch.
Yeah, almost.
We try not to say the A word, because I don't want anybody to have to, you know, buy a dollhouse on my account or something like
that. Yeah, and it's too easy to do, right? Yeah,
it's so easy. I have to caution everybody who comes on our show, no, call it Echo. And then I hear from people who say, but I changed my trigger word to Echo. Well, I can't help you then. Nothing I can do. Anyway, what's going on with your Echo?
All right, so in the morning, I'll be in the bathroom shaving, and I like to use my Google phone for my Android for listening to the news. So I'll say, play my briefing. Okay, Google, play my briefing. And I'll be listening to the briefing, and somewhere around, it's not every day, but there'll be a advertisement in the middle. And I guess it's NPR I'm listening to.
Yeah.
It'll talk about the, and I'll just give one example, because it wasn't just this one ad, but it'll be Ameritrade or one of them ads they're advertising, and it'll say to load this app on your Echo, simply say the A word.
Yeah.
Please enable the Ameritrade skill.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, the fact that it's using that, and I guess my question is, and it's not really a concern for me or anything, except for it's very interesting that they could get away with kind of trying to hijack your device.
Oh, so when it says that in your flash briefing, does the Echo perk up and say, okay, I've enabled the Ameritrade skill?
I haven't done it yet, because I'm in the bathroom shaving in the morning when I...
And so it doesn't hear it.
I'll run out of the bathroom to see if the light's even on. It's like, she didn't hear it.
When Amazon does its ads for Echo, and you see them on TV all the time, they play a sound behind the keyword, the trigger word, that keeps the Echo from waking up. And Ameritrade, anybody who's using those keywords should. For the very reason I would if I could. I just don't. Amazon doesn't tell anybody. So maybe that's the problem, is Ameritrade doesn't know. But, that's possible to do in an ad to make. And that's why I say Echo. I say, tell your Echo to enable the tech guy skill, which we don't have. But if we did, that's what I would do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I would bet you that if it's so you're saying it's coming from your Google Home, though.
I'm just using my Android phone, and for instance, like...
Yeah, so it's coming from Google, though. It's not coming from Amazon. It's not your flash briefing. Yeah. Oh, it is your flash briefing.
Well, no, it's coming from... Yeah, it's coming from the flash briefing, and it's the same one I have loaded on.
Yeah, the flash briefing, no ad in the flash briefing should trigger. I think even one of the rules. Because that would be sleazy, right? Because then you would add that skill.
I mean, if they could get away with it, I'm sure they would do it. But the fact that the FCC has such, you know, they're
actually, the FCC does not in any way regulate this one. Amazon does. Yeah, yeah. The FCC only regulates broadcast. Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Amazon does regulate it, though, and it is my, you know, we signed it because we do a flash briefing. I'd have to look at the contract, but it's my memory that you're not allowed to use trigger words in your flash briefing. Amazon probably frowns on that, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess my thought is like, and I don't have an able to make purchases on my Echo, you know, so I purposely had that disabled so I can't even add anything to the cart. But I guess I'm seeing the potential if someone wants to get
right
in there and make a purchase. I mean, you'll end up getting something delivered to your house that, you know. But yeah, I mean, if I don't recall hearing anything in the background that would, except for the voice on, and it's usually the same voice on NPR.
Yeah. Yeah, because it Echo is reading. So it'd be my guess that they would get booted very quickly from the flash briefing if they were to do that.
Okay.
Now, there's a very famous case. Burger King did do it in a television ad.
And I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and they got in a lot of trouble. Google was furious. That's one FCC does regulate. Google, what Burger King did is they modified, right before the ad aired, they modified their Wikipedia entry. Because that's what Google's home device looks up queries like that.
Oh, right.
So they, in the ad, they said, okay, Goog, what is the Whopper burger? And then if you happen to have a Google Assistant anywhere nearby, it would look that up in Wikipedia, and it delivered the special copy from Wikipedia. So everybody was pissed. Google was pissed. Wikipedia was pissed. I'm sure the FCC was pissed. This is.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you remember that? And I think Burger King promised it'll never happen again.
Yeah,
and of course,
it was clever that they did it.
It was very clever, yeah. And Google fixed it, you know, in future versions. Nobody's done it since. It happened by accident. Aaron Paul, who was the kid on Breaking Bad, used to do Xbox ads, and very famously, the Xbox ads would trigger anybody watching the TV on their Xbox. It would trigger their Xbox and turned off the TV. So that was unintentional. So there are cases of this, but I think it's pretty well frowned on. And I think the company that makes the assistant will definitely find a way to punish you.
Somehow. Yeah, and it's happened. It's not the first time. Like, I've noticed it here and there, and I can never, like, if I wanted to record it, like, I can't play it back because it'll never play that same commercial.
Right,
again.
I know.
But they're so sparse in between where it's like, oh, there it goes again. You know, it's like
this will all. This is actually becoming more and more of annoyances, which is as I was referring to earlier, accidental triggering of these devices. I really think this is going to go away soon. This is going to become so much of a problem. Companies are going to finally let you set your own trigger word. They have to.
Yeah, and I don't understand why it's so difficult. I know there's not a lot
That's the problem. Yeah, it's got to be really simple. Yeah.
How much memory does it take to put a, like, even if you made it like a Ford letter or something like that?
It's doable. The Moto X had a configurable Google Assistant trigger word. You can use anything you wanted, and I really like that. But that's the last thing that did that. I think that you're going to see that in the next couple of years. I really do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what transpires.
Hey, nice to talk to you. Appreciate your calling.
Hey, thanks, Leo.
All right, Mark. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 4th of July weekend. It's a little slow. This is a good time to get in. We got a few lines open. That's a very rare occurrence. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. 8888-ASK-LEO. Line one, Alan, Spring, Texas. Hello, Alan.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
It's the second time I got into you, so I'm glad it was a slow weekend so I can get
You're a miracle man.
I tell you. kind of an IT guy down here, but my primary duties, I work with PCs. I love them because they break down and keep me employed by using that.
There's definitely a higher percentage of PC calls on this show for whatever reason, yeah.
Yeah. I have a MacBook Pro 2015, last grade of the wonders, and had it for a while. I was wanting to get your opinion on things like CCleaner, for basically just kind of doing some spring cleaning on it. I was looking today about something called Mac Keeper, and then something flagged that said it was shareware virus type of thing.
I am not a fan of Mac Keeper. I wouldn't call it a virus, but it's definitely not. There are other... It's really kind of interesting. Maybe this reflects on what you said about PCs needing more help. There aren't a lot of really good Mac maintenance tools, and truthfully, I don't think you need them. But on the other hand, I'm the wrong guy to ask because I don't like CCleaner either. I don't think you need to clean your registry on a PC either. So modern operating systems shouldn't need a lot of help. The one time you might want a utility is if the drive dies, if you lose files, and then you might want a low-level utility that can examine the hard drive and recover erased files. But things that are like maintenance, like disk optimizers, don't need them anymore. CCleaner, registry cleaners, don't need it anymore. There are a lot of Mac tools that are, you know, supposedly clean the caches, don't need them anymore. Even Apple's own Disk First Aid, which is practically all the utility you need. It's in the utility folder and the applications folder. Disk Utility has a cleaning routine or a disk, they call it disk fix routine, or now I think they call it repair. And even that's done less and less over the years. In the old days, mostly what it did is went through and fixed permissions, because Apple's a kind of like a Unix operating system and has disk file access permissions that can be changed by accident, by programs, and sometimes that can cause problems. For instance, if a preference file gets locked, then a program won't be able to save its preferences and will misbehave. So the disk utility did little kind of minor maintenance like that. I don't even think you need that anymore. So honestly, I would stay, unless you have a problem, I would stay away from it. There are some Mac tools that have been around since forever that I would perhaps recommend, depending on what you need to do. Some of them are free. There's disk cache, you know, cache utilities and things like that. I hesitate even recommending these. They tend to be expensive. Alsoft makes a disk recovery tool that's okay. I just don't think you need it, to be honest. So
yeah.
You're new to Macs. Is that the issue?
Well, I got about maybe 2 or 3 years in Macs and over 20 years in PCs.
Right.
So I'm kind of a newbie in my own mind, but I'm also thinking with Mojave coming out, it's kind of a moot point because if I go with a free clean installation, then that's just, you know.
You're fresh. Yeah, and both Windows and Mac OS have done a really good job of creating operating system restore routines and repair routines that eliminate the need for a lot of third-party disk utilities. So,
okay.
I mean, there's Disk Warrior, which has been around for an awfully long time. That's the Alsoft program. It's at Alsoft, ALSOFT.com. But it's, you know, I don't know if it's worth spending $100 on something you probably really don't need. There's quite a question about these days in the Mac world, but I think it also should be in the PC world. Do you need something like this? And it's, in my opinion, probably not. And when you do, you should, you know, you'll get the proprietary tool you'll need, I guess. Apple's disk utility is sufficient.
Yeah, because I don't even really run any kind of virus software on it.
I don't either. You don't need it either. No. I'm one of those guys who says the less you install, the better. Every program you install on your computer potentially opens back doors to bad guys, adds flaws, security issues, and it's particularly true of utilities, low-level things like antivirus software and disk utilities, because typically they'll hook into, in the Mac case, the kernel. Actually, it's true in Windows, too. They'll hook into the lower-level parts of the operating system, which means they can be really a bad avenue for bad guys. The other one that's widely used is called Tech Tool Pro. Again, I'll give them to you for your reference. We'll put links in the show notes, but I don't think you need it. You know, if you have a disc issue at some point, then go get Disc Warrior and you'll be fine.
Okay. What about, I guess, other than coming to, you know, Twit, which I look at all your programs.
Thank you.
Weekly,
thank you.
iOS Today.
Yeah.
Other than that, I keep up with Patrick Norton over there on his
yep.
Tech Thing.
Tech Thing is his podcast, TekThing. And he's very good at that.
Yeah.
We may differ. You know, sometimes we'll differ on recommendations. I mean, that's the thing. No geek agree. You know, not all geeks agree on any of this stuff. And I fall on the side of install less.
Yeah.
And do less. Especially nowadays, modern operating systems have really been refined. You know, Apple now is using a new file system, the APFS, which really is great and has long been needed. And eventually, Apple's going to turn on some of the features of APFS that'll make it even less necessary for disk utilities. There's a snapshot feature that allows you to do a backup, much better than Time Machine, a backup of an existing setup and quickly go back to it. It's a more modern style file system, a copy-on-write file system that, frankly, is superior to NTFS. I'm sure Microsoft at some point will do this as well. So these things, and by the way, the fact that APFS, if you install Mojave and you have an internal drive, it'll almost certainly be reformatted as APFS, means that some of these tools like Disk Warrior may not even work anymore. It's a whole new world for them.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would say just stick with the stuff the company gives you, and you're probably going to be fine. More important, as you know, more importantly, don't install stuff from strangers. Don't install programs you didn't ask for. Don't click links in email. Don't click links in messaging or on Facebook. And if any time a program says, oh, you need to download this, be suspicious. Even if it's Adobe Flash, oh, you need an update. Be suspicious. Make sure you're getting it from Adobe. And most of the time, that's where people get in trouble, not because their registry got too big. So that's the best thing to do. And the less you install, the better. That's a kind of my new philosophy. I've been refining this over the last four decades of doing this. But I think this is the right philosophy. The more you install, the more risk you add to unreliability and even security flaws. Install less. Only install just the stuff you need. And if there's any question, don't install it. Don't install it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up in about 15 minutes with some photography tips. Lots more of your calls, too. 8888 Ask Leo. Hey, Chris.
Hi there. How are you?
I am great. You sound good. You're coming in loud and clear.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Skype has just removed the ability to fix the mic volume, so it's going to auto-adjust.
Criminally.
They just took that away. I even can't select different devices for the earphones and for the microphone anymore.
That's probably they probably defer to the operating system.
They're dumbing it down. No, they're just dumbing it down.
We've tried every alternative I can find, and really nothing is as good as Skype, unfortunately. So
well, and as reliable, I know.
Yeah, we'll have to just live with it unless we can find something better. Okay, talk to you in a few.
I hope the audio is going to be good. I just don't have as much control over it anymore. It
sounds okay right now.
Okay.
But that's good to know because it won't just be you. It'll be everybody we talk to.
It's in the latest Skype version for Mac 8.24.
Yeah, we still tell people to update because,
it does it automatically anyway. So.
Yeah, you don't have a choice. Well, there you go. All right, be right back. Talk to you in 15. Thank you, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. Episode 1502. Wow. And we are in July already. The website, techguylabs.com. Great to know if you are listening to the show and you say, I need a link. What did he say? What was that? Or you want to correct me or add something? You can do that all at techguylabs.com. There's no fee, no sign up. It's just wide open. Like the web. Remember the web used to be like that? You didn't have to have an account to get in. I think kids today think the web is Facebook or Snapchat or, I don't know, Instagram. Kids don't really use Facebook, do they? Not in the U.S. anyway. Sam in Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sam.
Good afternoon, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Long time listener, first time caller to get in.
Wonderful. I'm glad you got in.
All right. Well, I'm calling you today as I have an HP notebook, and I went on vacation out the country for about 6 months, and I come back, and I only set this computer up to a four-digit PIN. I didn't set up with a password or any email for Windows. So when I got back, I tried the PIN too many times, and it told me it redirected me to a password, which I don't have, and then it asked me for a removable media disk in order to try to reset the password, and I'm not able to do that either.
So
options left here to get into the window.
First of all, a 6 week vacation?
Well, yes. 6 months, I'm sorry.
6 months vacation? I'm so jealous. All right. So no one used your computer in that 6 months, right?
No, definitely not.
So it was just closed and sitting there.
Yes.
I hate to tell you this, but you can't set up. Is it Windows 10?
Windows 10, yes.
You can't set up Windows 10 with a PIN unless you give it a password. So you did use a password. You just don't remember it. But I tell you, I think I know what your password is.
Really?
Well, I don't know what the password is, but it's your Microsoft account.
So when Microsoft account.
Yeah. So when you first set up Windows 10, you can't. It is possible to set up Windows 10 with a local password. The old days. Remember the old days? You'd have a password that was local. It wasn't very effective.
Okay.
But nowadays, when you first set up Windows 10, it says, "Okay, log into your Microsoft account or create one if you don't have one." And in order to bypass that, you have to go. You have to click a number of buttons and so forth and say, "No, I don't want to do that." Normally, you just do it. Now, I don't know if you remember having a Microsoft account.
Well, I do have a Microsoft account, which is actually under MSN.
Right. So my suggestion is try that.
Okay.
And that's the password it's asking for. Once you log in with your and that what happens is after 6 months, it goes, well, he hasn't used his PIN. We better go back. We've revert. But once you log in with your Microsoft password, from then on, the PIN will work again.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. All right. If not that, I would have to take it to a repair shop so they can reinstall.
No, you can bypass the Windows password. But here's the deal. Almost certainly you associate it with your Microsoft account. If you forget your password or your Microsoft account, they have, forgot my password. They have a way to recover it. So that's what you would go through and do. Now, if you don't remember doing this at all?
Does it
ring a bell? You did it a long time ago.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I'm going
to
try.
I bet you, because I don't, as far as I know, there's no way to have a PIN to log in unless you first log in with your Microsoft account.
Right, exactly. Okay, and I was thinking also if I could buy a secondary disk to, because I'm not sure what it's asking me for.
You can recover it. There's other ways to do it. There's the official way, but there's also Loftcrack and other tools that'll let you get into that password.
I'm trying to avoid spending $150.
No. You can do it all yourself. Absolutely, you can do it all yourself.
Okay, well, thanks for the motivation.
Yeah, you're welcome. I bet you that account will work. The reason they do that, it's actually a smart thing. Well, it's good for Microsoft because then what Microsoft wants is that all of your activities with Microsoft stuff is associated back to one identity. Every company wants that now. You know, your Google account, your Twitter account, your Facebook account. They want as much as possible to associate your activity with that account because they use it, right, to sell advertising. Sometimes they sell it to third parties. It's the more they know about you, every company, even Apple. Apple says no, but no. Even Apple, the more they know about you, the better from their point of view. And they'll justify it by saying, well, then we can customize it for your needs. But mostly what they're doing is customizing the advertising. I don't have a problem with that, but you should be aware of it. So they want you to use a Microsoft account. They don't want you to make up a random password because they can't associate that back to you. But with your Microsoft account, now we can collect data of all kinds. So they really strongly with Windows 10 encourage you to do that. But there's a pitfall to that. There is, for me anyway, I want to guard my Microsoft account with a very long, random password. A good password. But that's hard to type. It's hard to remember. I'm not going to memorize the long password on my Microsoft account. I don't use it that often. And Microsoft understood, well, you know, this is a problem because this person, every time he logs into Windows, he or she has to type in this long, strong password. So they let you, once you've done that, once you've set up the account, if you go into the account settings, the control panel, associate a shorter PIN code, for instance, with your login. That way you just have to enter a few digits. There's even, you can do it via pictures if you have a Windows Hello compatible camera, a fingerprint reader. You can use an image. You can. There's all sorts of ways to do it. If you go look at that control panel, most people I think use the PIN. And I would say don't do a 4-digit PIN. That might be a little easy to guess. Do a 6-digit PIN. That's going to be hard to guess. Easy to type. I actually have I use a 7-digit PIN because I use my, and I don't think I'm giving anything away here, childhood phone number. You know that phone number you had when you were a kid that was burnt into your brain? ABC1234. You can't forget it ever because, you know, your parents made sure you learned that number. That number turns out to be really useful in passwords and PINs. If they let you do a 7-digit PIN or a 10-digit PIN, if you remember the area code, that's really good. You'll remember it, but no one else will. And it has the secondary advantage of being very easy and fast to enter, right? So I bet you, since it's asking for a PIN, you set it up with your Microsoft password. I'm almost certain. And that's why they do it that way, because those passwords should be long and strong. Bob in San Jose, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
I'm good. I called a few weeks ago, and I had a LG phone that was burning the battery down.
I remember, yeah.
Right. And I got new batteries, put them in, and it did exactly the same thing.
Oh, so crud.
I finally did reset the phone. And solve problem. I just wanted to report back to you.
Good to know.
Solved it.
So that meant there was some program in there that was chewing up batteries.
That is correct. I don't know what the program was,
right.
But you know, something got in there. I don't know what it was. And I reset it, put it back to normal, and it's been running just
Thanks,
fabulous.
Bob. I'm glad that fixed it. This is why modern versions of Android and iOS both will tell you what the battery hogs are. You can go into the settings and look, and you can see which programs are chewing up battery, because it's true. Some Facebook's notorious for this. Some programs just are always looking at the location, always checking, and those are the ones that'll kill your battery. Had a little extra Paul Simon go there. It's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Chris is a professional photographer, gives great workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com, and joins us every week to help us get better pictures. Good evening, Chris.
Good evening. I just added a new one, by the way.
Oh,
Kyrgyzstan,
yeah?
Kyrgyzstan. Silk Road, Kyrgyzstan. Also in 2019. There are more coming up in the next few weeks. Just FYI.
I'm sitting down with my wife because we've really got to decide which one to do here. Because I don't have anything booked for next year, and that would be so much fun to go.
That's a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I tried to keep it open so I could do things like Kyrgyzstan. What is in Kyrgyzstan?
Kyrgyzstan, it's a mountainous region, beautiful landscapes, horseback riders, wow. A very laid-back culture, colorful dresses.
You can do Bhutan again.
I will do Bhutan again, not in 2019, but I'm looking at 2020 right now.
See, I love going on these trips because not only do you do great travel, but then you get to go somewhere really interesting and take pictures and have a professional team helping you do a better job. What a great idea. June 1st through 13th, exactly 1 year from now. Silk Road, Kyrgyzstan. Discover the Top Floor. I'll give you a big plug. Discover the Top Floor.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Now, Chris, what are we going to talk about here today?
Well, it has a bit to do with travel because we've been talking over the last weeks.
Oh,
you
boy.
And I have been talking about you. I was trying to force you into or shame you into only taking the 50 millimeter, the nifty 50.
You succeeded. I'm going to do it. I have great you know what I'm doing? I'm going to practice this week because we're taking a little time off for the Independence Day in the States. So I'm going to be a 3 days in Mendocino County, beautiful ocean, and I'm going to only take the 50.
So I just want to briefly talk about what is so special about it.
Yeah,
and
would you?
Why is it a good idea to leave everything else at home and just take it? The one reason it's so great is because it's so boring. That doesn't sound like it makes a lot of sense, but you know, it doesn't have that wide angle wow that you see when everything is kind of distorted, or it doesn't have the compression you get from a long telephoto lens. So it kind of forces you to compose well. And that's a pretty good skill to have, to do good compositions. It's a bit unforgiving in that respect, I would say. It's a bit like jumping into the deep end. That's how you learn to swim, right?
So we should explain that if you're using a point-and-shoot or your camera phone, you don't have a choice of lenses.
True. You have some telephoto in the F1.10 and other phones, but...
Yeah, I mean, you're really stuck with whatever the company gives you. But on the other hand, if you're using a interchangeable lens camera, and increasingly as the prices on these go down, people are, you know, serious amateurs are using them, you can choose a variety of different lenses, one of which... Now, it depends on the camera, but you want one that will simulate 50 millimeters. Now, on a full-frame sensor, it'll say 50.
About 50 millimeters. Yeah. It's also one of the cheapest lenses you can get. It's an old design, so it's really well refined. It's not expensive to make. On a APS-C camera, that would be more in the 30 millimeter range, 35 maybe. On a Micro Four Thirds camera, it would be more in the 25 millimeter range.
And they say it's kind of simulates the eye's field of view. I don't know if that's true.
The way you perceive depth in a shot. The way you perceive depth in a shot, yes, it is pretty much how the eyes, not the width, not the, when you look through your eyes, you see 180 degrees of range from left to right. That doesn't do that, but the way the depth is portrayed.
Also, because it's a 50 and easy to make, sometimes you can get a wider aperture, a lower f-stop on these, and that gives you good low light performance.
Brighter. It's awesome brighter. In low light. Yeah. A lot of people have the first revelation when they use that and they realize, I won't have to use the flash anymore for my indoor photography because it's so bright, it lets so much light in that you can just turn the flash off and have all this natural light, all the available light, which makes shots look so much better than if you use the flash that's built into your camera. Image quality is great. Again, that is a revelation for a lot of people who come from the kit lens, which is good lens. The kit lenses that come with these cameras are good, very good, but not as good in image quality as one of these lenses. You'll also get to experience a good level of bokeh, like getting the background out of focus. That is just, if people get that taste for the first time to be able to completely throw the background out of focus in a portrait, a lot of people will just stick with the wide open lens with the really out of focus background for a long time because it's so addictive. And there is one trick that I like. If you are into macro photography, you could buy an expensive macro lens and just, I don't know, spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars for one.
Believe me, I have. Yeah.
If you have a nifty 50 millimeter lens, all you need is a couple of extension tubes, which are just like rings that you put in between the camera and the lens. You change the distance between the camera and the lens, and that allows you to get much closer. So you kind of have a very cheap alternative to an expensive macro lens there.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to do this on a big trip to Europe in the fall, I think. I'm going to try it this week and see if I feel hampered. The advantage is I don't have to carry a bag with 18 lenses in it.
That's another advantage. and you will, I mean, the jumping into the deep end thing also helps you because it's also not a zoom lens. It's a prime lens, which means it has a fixed focal length. It's 50 and only 50, which means if you want to get closer to something, you literally have to get closer. You have to use what we call the sneaker zoom. You have to walk closer or get further away if you want to cover more angle, more width of a scene. And that will teach you an important lesson because it is the change in perspective. Zooming is one thing, but the change in perspective is what really makes a big difference.
Okay, any tips for this intentionally limiting myself to a 50 millimeter lens? Anything I should think about when I'm using this? I want to get the most out of it if I'm going
to
do it.
Try to be deliberate with your compositions. Think about what's in the shot, what's in the background. These are things that are true for all lenses. Doesn't matter what you shoot with or if it's a phone or if it's an expensive camera. It doesn't matter. But the composition rules, like try to minimize the stuff that's in there. Try to limit it to what's important. Now, here's one danger, though. Once you had that taste of a bright prime lens, a prime lens that lets a lot of light in and has great image quality, it might want to make you buy only prime lenses from then on.
It has happened.
So just be careful. You might not touch your zooms for a while.
Wow. I'm going to really, this is going to be interesting. I'm going to feel very challenged. Oh, and I added one more challenge.
You did?
The lens I'm going to use is manual focus.
That just adds.
Why are you laughing so wickedly?
Oh, because you'll come back a changed photographer. I mean,
well, I need something. I need something. It takes a while now, so I have to compose the photo, maybe even involving walking to get closer or farther.
No.
And then I have to manually focus it, which means at a minimum of a couple of seconds fiddling around.
You're very deliberate with your photos.
I remember doing a photo tour with a landscape photographer who used a medium format camera. And this was in Tasmania a few years ago in Australia. And I came back with 7,000 images after 10 days. Most of the other photographers, 3,000 to 6,000 images. He came back with a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
But they were great.
But each and everyone was great, right?
They were great because everything was so much work for him. So maybe there'll be an advantage. We'll see. Hey, I'd be happy any trip to have 12 great pictures from any trip. That's great. You don't need thousands.
You don't need more.
Chris Marquardt, you do need him. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. I can't wait to take a trip with you, and maybe I'll just bring the Nifty 50. Who knows? And if you want to learn to be a better photographer, maybe you can do this little thing with me and try it. When we come back, I'll tell you about Chris's photo assignment for the month. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What is the word of the month? I know it's a body part.
It's eyes.
Eyes, that's right.
Eyes, where are
the eyes?
Eyes
have it.
Okay. Thank you.
So I will probably talk to Burke and we might try IP detail again.
You sounded fine.
Yeah, as long as I talk, it doesn't raise the level
to
the maximum. But the slider goes all the way to the right, and I can't do anything about this.
We're going to have
a lot of nothing I can do about it.
Maybe Microsoft will realize they made a mistake and fix it.
I sure hope so. Yeah. Everyone let them know. It's
terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. And maybe we have to go to Skype TX. Actually, I think they discontinued Skype TX. Oh, Lord. All right, Christopher. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Talk to you again in
a
week.
Have a good one. See ya.
Thanks. Bye.
Took me an hour to get this coffee, but it was worth it. I've learned. So I go out on break one, and the coffee machine needs water. Okay. Put water in there. Well, wait a minute. No. The water bottle's empty on the water cooler. So now I got to get a new water bottle. Okay, put the water bottle on the water cooler. That's the end of break one. Break two. Now fill up the reservoir and the coffee maker with the water and the water bottle. And then go get a cup and put some cream in it. And then go make the first cup. And that's the end of break two. Kim was very kind. She brought the coffee in. I said, no, it's not done yet. Because then I add a shot of espresso in break three. And then I can have my coffee. 45 minutes later. Toshiba's doing a Fire TV. No, I don't know about that one, Joy. So you get a TV that has a Toshiba... Yeah, it's a TV with Fire. See, I would prefer to go with maybe the TCL with Roku built in would be my first choice. I think Fire TV is not as good as Roku. And it really is a bit of an advertisement for Amazon, a bit. I'm not a fan of smart TVs in general. Get the best TV and then add the smartness later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo, the phone number, line four, Terry Irvine. Hello, Terry.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
So I have a 2017 Toyota 4Runner.
Okay.
And anytime I use the Bluetooth in my car to either make a call, the person calling me just gets this terrible echo.
Oh. But, and that's to no matter who you call?
Yeah, no matter who I call, no matter if they call me.
And it doesn't happen when you call just using your phone?
Correct.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what kind of phone the person has, because I have people that call me Samsung, LG, Apple.
There, I mean, occasionally you'll get problems with carriers and echoey calls, but this only happens in your car.
Correct.
Yeah, so it sounds like something's going on. One thing I would just try, just to see if this is the case, you know, the car has its own microphone. And normally when you switch to Bluetooth in a car, it will use that microphone. There are settings often in phones. What kind of phone is it?
It's an Apple 7 Plus.
Okay. There are, I don't can't remember if Apple gives you this setting or not, but there are settings in some phones to say when you're on Bluetooth, use the car's microphone or not. And it may be that for some reason it's got both microphones on, and that certainly would give you an echo. So one thing you could try is when you're on the car phone and somebody's saying, oh, you're echoing, tap the phone. Just tap it. Because okay. If that microphone is hot, it will sound not like tip, 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 tip. It won't sound this way to you. You'll have to ask your friend. It'll sound like boom, 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 boom. Because you're tapping on the microphone. If that's the case, that's probably what's going on. You've got both the car microphone and your phone microphone on. Now, I'm looking in the iOS. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing in iOS a setting that you might want to look for that lets you turn your microphone to use the car's microphone when you're in Bluetooth. So okay. I would check that. I'm looking. I don't see it off the top of my head, but that's something you might want to look for. I'm just guessing, but certainly if you had two microphones on, one, you know, in your dashboard or overhead and one on your phone, that'd give you a very unpleasant sound.
Yeah, I get nothing but complaints. Nobody wants to call me.
Yeah, the other thing, and I always recommend this when you have Bluetooth issues, which is very common, is unpair and repair the phone. You know, go in your car's console where it says the Bluetooth, paired Bluetooth devices, and forget your phone and do it again. Have you tried that?
Okay, I'll try that too.
That almost always, it's so strange. Bluetooth is flaky as heck. And I do this, and I've done this in many different cars and had, you know, I've never heard the echo problem, but there are all sorts of other problems. And often, unpairing and repairing just fixes whatever was going on.
Okay.
All right. I suspect, though, that it's two microphones at once, and there may be a setting in iOS. But either, I try to do both, see if that helps. Hey, I appreciate the call, Terry. Next time, call me from your car, and I can hear the echo. See what it sounds like. Micah in Maine. Hey, Micah.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm just happy to be speaking with you, Leo.
Well, thank you, Micah.
I have a possible solution to this daggone Skype issue, because I hate the way Microsoft continues to change Skype.
We were talking about this, and I should explain, because we were doing it off the air. Chris Marquardt, who joins us via Skype, many of our guests do, he noted that when he updated Skype on the Mac, it suddenly took out the volume control for his microphone. It was all automatic gain control, and it's not very good. So if he doesn't say anything, it turns the volume up and up and up and up and up, and then his first word is really loud, and then it goes, whoa, and turns it down. Automatic gain control does not work for broadcast, that's for sure. So what can he do, Chris? I mean,
well,
Micah?
He's Chris. I'm Micah.
Yeah.
One of the things that we do with the podcast, with some podcasts we use Skype, although Skype keeps changing, and multiple accounts of Skype, and have one that was personal and one was for business, and you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway, with some other podcasts, we are using Google Hangouts now.
Yeah, you know, I've tried a lot of different voice over IP solutions. And in general, voice over IP does sound much better. You're on a phone right now. And
yes, I am.
Phones, when they first, back in the days of Alexander Graham Bell, literally, when the phone company first started, they asked an engineer to figure out what's the lowest quality you could have and still be intelligible. And that's what they picked. It's analog, but it's effectively 6-bit sound. And that's why a phone call sounds a little scratchy. You can understand it though, right? But it's not. It doesn't sound like full quality audio. And of course, when we're doing podcasts or radio shows, we want it to sound like you're on a microphone. And so it was a real revelation for me. This actually happened in 2004 when I was doing the radio show. Somebody called on Skype, and it sounded like I was sitting right next to him. I said, "Whoa, what are you doing?" And he explained. And from then on, we started using Skype for everything because it sounds so much better than a phone call. Unfortunately, Microsoft bought Skype a few years ago, and they've been slowly making it stupider and worse. And this is the latest thing. Hangouts, here's the reason we've tried Hangouts, of course. Hangouts uses an open source codec called Brick, B-R-I-K. Skype has a, unfortunately, proprietary codec. The codec is how you compress the sound. And the Skype codec, the way they make the sound compressed, sounds so much better than any open source codec that we've always preferred Skype. But you're right, we might have to try something else.
It is much better, but give a listen to the Airline Pilot Guy podcast sometime. They're all over the country and all over the world and doing it all through Hangouts, and it's not that bad.
Good. So the sound quality is one thing, and the other one is breakup and kind of jitter and all that stuff. Is the quality pretty consistent?
Pretty consistent, pretty stable, and they're doing it audio and video at the same time, so just like you are, and it usually works out okay. I mean, there are issues, there are always issues, but most of that is based on bandwidth and where you right. are, and you have great bandwidth.
So that's right, yeah, as long as bandwidth is good, yeah. Well, Micah, thank you so much. I will. We have another solution we've tried also. I can't remember the name of it, but we've had Chris use that in the past. I've yet to find the perfect replacement for Skype. But we might have to. Microsoft, thanks so much for taking something that has worked great since 2004, didn't need improvement in any regard. It did not. And slowly, over the last 3 or 4 years, they've been stripping out features that we use to make it sound really good. We've become kind of the kings of making Skype calls sound great on the radio show and the podcasts I do. And it's getting harder and harder. Thank you, Micah. Great to talk to you. And don't forget that Airline Guy podcast. That's a great show if you like to learn more about what it's like to be a airline guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More calls coming up right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. We talk smartwatches, everything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. I forgot to mention our photo assignment. We had Chris Marquardt on last hour, and he's our digital photography guru, and he recommends taking as many photos as you can to get better, and every month gives us an assignment to encourage us to get out there and take photos. There's no prize. It's not a competition. It's just an assignment. Every month. So this month, the assignment is take a picture illustrating the word or concept eyes. I guess we can say it's E-Y-E-S, not I-Z-E. So E-Y-E-S. But we don't say any more than that. Now, here's how it works. What you do is you take that picture and you submit it to our tech guy group on Flickr. Flickr is a free photo sharing site. Really great. Used to be owned by Yahoo. If you have a Yahoo account, you still have a login to it. It's now owned by a really great company called SmugMug. They're going to keep that alive, which is really good news for Flickr enthusiasts. It's always been the best place to share photos, I think. FLICKR.com. And in there, you'll find a group called the Tech Guy Group. It's a big one. I think it's more than 11,000 members, many thousands of photographs. And if you want to participate in the assignment, just upload, tag your photo with the word eyes after you upload it to Flickr and then submit it to the Tech Guy Group. Our moderator, Renee Silverman, there will say thank you. You can submit up to one photo a week. It usually is about 4 weeks in between assignments. And so that means about 2 or 3 weeks, Chris will look at all of the submissions and pick three to talk about on the show. And you'll get some credit then. That's the only reward. Eyes, the subject this month. Line three is Dale, Redondo Beach. Hello, Dale. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I really appreciate your program. I used to repair and rebuild computers, but I'm retired now. Anyway, what my problem is, I had a Windows 7 computer, HP, brand new, 2 years ago. And about 7 months ago, 8 months ago, I did the latest Windows Up Store before that, I went from Windows 7. I updated when it was free with Windows 10.
Good.
Everything was fine for a year. I was happy. And then all of a sudden, in January, the last Windows update that came to me really screwed me up. First of all, it knocked out all my restore points. It removed some programs. It messed up my LastPass contacts, slowed down the computer. And so I finally called Microsoft, and I spent two hours with one of their technicians, which was all free because it's part of the update help. And she really knew her stuff and worked really hard with me. And between her and I, we couldn't get it fixed. So then we found out, and she had a couple more notes, was that people that originally had Windows 7 computers update to Windows 10, you'd go through a Windows update checklist, and it would say, okay, these will work, these won't work, and so on. And in my case, everything worked. They didn't want me to take anything off, so I updated Windows 10, and everything was fine. Then, at the last January update, it went to hell. So, turns out what she says that the Microsoft people think is that the computer that was Windows 7 had their items that would make Windows 10 work okay. But as Windows 10 started being updated further and further, it got to a point where it was beyond my original CPU and memory and motherboard and everything else. And that what I should probably do is reformat the hard drive, go back to Windows 7. And
no, she's wrong. All right, let's start over. First of all, it's only a two-year-old computer, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely modern enough. How much RAM do you have?
8.
Yeah, that's plenty.
I have DDS hard drives, the fast ones.
SSDs, yeah, the solid-state drives. Yeah, yeah. And your processor is an i5?
I'm not sure. I don't remember right
now. Yeah, it's an Intel processor, though?
I'm not sure. Right?
Okay, I'm sure it is. Even if it's an AMD, that doesn't matter. If it's 2 years old, it was a new computer 2 years ago, there's no reason. Windows 10 came out 2 years ago. There's no reason it's not compatible with Windows 10. So that's bogus on the face of it. You can't, going back to Windows 7 is not a good idea. You definitely had something go wrong in the update. These things happen. Lately, there have been a lot of problems with the latest update, which came out in kind of May timeframe. It was 1803. Your problems were the fall update from last year, 1709, I would guess.
Yeah.
But it's not unusual when you get a big update like that that things break. I mean, it's unusual in the sense that it, remember, there's a billion Windows users, maybe half a billion Windows 10 users. They all get the update. And if even 1/10 of 1% has a problem, that's hundreds of thousands of people having problems. Actually, right. it's more than a million people having problems, right? So it's not perfect. It isn't. However, there's a simple, relatively simple fix, which is what I would do. And I recommend this anyway. If you've upgraded from one version of the operating system to another, you probably had this experience too, going, you know, in your day fixing computers. An upgrade of an operating system to a big new version often leaves behind stuff that maybe isn't the best. The best solution now for you is to start fresh, but not with Windows 7, with Windows 10. You really should be on Windows 10. The good news is once you've activated Windows 10 on that machine, it's activated. You don't have to get a serial number or anything. That Microsoft calls it an entitlement. Your machine is entitled to Windows 10. So what you can do is you go to Microsoft, and always get this from Microsoft. They call it the Media Creation Tool. You download the Media Creation Tool for, I would get the latest version, 1803 of Windows 10. That's probably what you'll get. You put it on a USB key. You boot up on your machine, and you wipe the drive, and you start over. Now, of course, you're going to want to back up your data before you do that and keep track of programs you need to reinstall and all that. But I guarantee you that'll fix all your problems.
Okay, so how do I get the Media Creation Tool?
Google Microsoft USB, or actually you don't even say USB, just Google Microsoft Media Creation Tool. You'll find a Windows 10 download page. You always want to get it, obviously, from Microsoft. They will not ask for a serial number. It's a free download. You just get it. They'll give you instructions, which you want to read carefully, on how to make a bootable USB thumb drive. Do you have one of those lying around? It needs to be, I think,
eight.
Yeah, of course you do. Who doesn't? They practically give them away in cereal boxes now.
Yeah.
You need them to be 8 gigs, I think, is the minimum size. And so you'll make a bootable USB drive. And then depends on the set, on your motherboard, but, you know, you probably see it when you first boot up. You know, in the old BIOS startup page where it says press F1 or press F12 or press escape or press delete. It depends on the motherboard to get to the menu that tells you the boot order. You remember these from, I'm sure you remember this.
Right, yeah. Right.
So you want to change the boot order this one time to boot to the USB drive. And it'll give you an opportunity to, you know, look at the partitions. You might want to even delete the partitions, create a new partition, erase it fully so it's fresh and clean, and install Windows 10. There's nothing on your hardware if it's 2 years old that won't work with Windows 10, I guarantee you. LastPass will work fine. All your stuff will work fine. You just have to reinstall it. It's not unusual with a big upgrade, especially on a machine that's been upgraded from a previous version of the operating system, to have problems. This will fix it.
Okay, one more question, if I may.
Sure.
I have two computers connected through one of those plugs where I can push a button and switch back and forth from one to the other.
Yeah. And that's a KVM switch.
Yes, KVM. Anyway, my problem is that when I go to try to hit F2, in my case, to get to the BIOS, it doesn't work because the keyboard's not connected because it's through that other switch. That means I probably have to put it
on the keyboard. Yeah, the KVM's probably blocking it. Yeah, you'll have to plug the USB keyboard directly into the machine to hit F2.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, then you've answered my question.
I promise you this will, first of all, take less time than that long call with Microsoft.
Oh, yeah.
And you will have a much better operating machine. The SSD will just scream. Everything will be great. You'll be happy.
Yeah, I put them on all my kids
Smart.
And my grandkids' computers.
You bet.
Everybody is delighted with the speed of them.
They're lucky to have you.
Well, yeah.
Your own personal tech.
Yeah.
Hey, it's really nice to talk to you. Thanks. I hope you'll let me know how it goes, Dale, okay?
I will.
Thank you.
Thank you for all the work you do for everybody. I don't know how many people, customers of mine, I give them all the instructions on how to get to watch
thank
and listen
you.
To your program.
Oh, bless you.
Well, you're helping everybody, and you're not charging very much.
No, I'm cheap, aren't I?
Yeah.
All I ask is a little ear time.
Oh, I give you a lot of
thank you, Dale. It's really a pleasure.
Thank you again.
Take care. My pleasure. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Again, I'll refer you to the website. Anytime you have, you know, you hear something on the show, you don't have to write it down. Just go to techguylabs.com. It's free and it's always there for you. Isn't it funny? They just assumed everybody would know what that was. We're a little too analog, digital here for them. Here, bring it. I'll show you. I'll show the chat room. John was trying to figure out, what the heck is this thing? He got this, just appeared on his desk. He couldn't figure out what it is. Doesn't open. But I recognize it because I'm an old guy. Do you know what that is? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm going to see this guy in December. The boss, Bruce Springsteen, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Sometimes, you know, we here at the Tech Guy Labs, we get confused about old-fashioned technology. My studio engineer, John, was going around saying, what is this? What is this? It appeared on my desk. It's an oval piece of plastic, a black, it looks like a hockey puck that got sat on, squished. It's got an ad for a company on it, but it doesn't open. What does it do? John is apparently a denizen of the digital age. He doesn't remember paperclip. It's a paperclip magnet. You put that on your desk and you put paperclips on there and it holds it. You don't want it? You don't have any paperclips? Of course not. We're digital here. You ain't got no paperclips. You know, you have to wonder, kids, you know, they still on most software like Microsoft Office, what's the save icon? So it's one of those floppy disks. Well, what a kid looking at that, do they know what that is? I have a shirt somewhere that has a floppy disk on it, and a kid came up to me and said, "Oh, why do you have the save icon on your shirt?" 88, you know, it's a different world. It's a different world. 8888, Ask Leo. Line 1 is John in Anaheim, California. Hello, John.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
can't believe I got in, but love your show.
Well, it's a little slow this weekend because of the 4th of July, so.
Oh, well, good.
Thank you.
Good timing.
Thank you. What can I do for you?
Well, you've always told us that the only way to get a movie or a program off of our cable box was through the analog hole.
Well, it isn't the only way, but it's generally the only way because companies are afraid, deadly afraid, that you will pirate their precious cargo.
Well, I was putting together my home theater, yep. And in the back of the box, I noticed that it had a RJ45 jack.
Oh.
And I called them, and I asked them what that was for, and they said, oh, that's just for us for testing. I figured, it's like chicken soup. It can't hurt, so I plugged it into my network switch.
What happened?
Well, a couple months later, I noticed on my smart TV there was this little icon for the cable box, and I clicked on it, and here was all my programs, and I was able to play them.
Wow. That is definitely, don't say that out loud about it, and don't tell anybody, because that's a mistake. Yeah.
Well, that's why I didn't mention the name.
Yes, thank you.
But then on my network, I went to my PC, and I was able to see it also, and I was able to copy them onto my...
See, that's the next question. You can copy them, and what file format are those files?
Well, most of them are TTSs. And
okay.
And Kodi plays them just fine.
Yeah, that's the DVD file format.
Then the other one is a DTCP-IP, which it won't play.
Hmm.
And so my question was, is there anything out there that will play it or will convert it or also convert those TTSs to MP4s or ISO files?
Certainly the TTSs can. TTS is, as I remember, a MUXT file format that contains audio and video. It's what DVDs use. So
yeah, it's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, it'll be... I think it'll be MPEG-2 in there, and I can't remember what the audio format is, but almost anything that can read video files should be able to read that. That's why you can play it back. And,
okay.
You know, you could open – here's what I would try. Certainly you can open it with VLC, which is a really useful video player for Macs.
The TTS or the DTC?
Well, you could certainly open the TTS with it, and I would try opening the IP file with it.
With the VLS?
Yeah, with VLC. It's from videoland.org. Free program. It's a video player, and it's kind of a Swiss Army knife of video players. It could play the most formats of any video player I've ever seen, and it's absolutely free. Now, did you look at the file size of the IP files? Because there may not be video in there.
Well, I've played them, and yeah, they're about the average size of a DVD. They're
okay.
Like anywhere from 4 to 5 gigs.
The TTS files, but how about the other files?
Let's see here if I can find one.
So my guess is those are not, in fact, video files, but just index files that go...
No, they're also 4 gigs.
They're the same size. Okay, well, then there's video in there.
Yeah.
Tell me the extension again.
DTCP, David, Tom, Charlie, Paul, -IP.
Huh. Oh, interesting. Well, I've found a DTCP-IP player. Oh, okay. This is DTCP-IP is for playing back files over the network, for DLNA, which is Microsoft's. So any DLNA-aware player, including, I think, Windows Media Player, should be able to play those. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So
the interesting thing is, you know, usually you have to have a box at each of your TVs to watch whatever's on your DVR recorder. But the smart TV recognizes it and plays it across the network.
The DTCP is a copy protection.
Mm-hmm.
Format, digital transmission content protection. So it's designed to keep you from playing those files over the network. obviously, not doing a very good job. So it's probably, I would guess, exactly the same content as in the is there one for one for every DTCP?
No. Most all of the ones that I've copied over are TTSs, and they play, as I say, they play fine.
Yeah,
there's just a scattering of of ones that are the.
I wonder if that file is created automatically when you play something over the network or use DTLNA or DLNA. That's an interesting question. That I think is probably identical to the TTS files, But if you Google DTCP-IP, oh boy, that's a mouthful, you'll find a number of programs that can play it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad you found the secret back door. Always check those for service-only ports, USB ports, and now Ethernet ports. Every once in a while, there's something on those things. Thank you. Thank you for telling me. They'll fix that quick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's interesting. Yeah, that's a copy protected format. Cable Labs approved. Digital transmission content protection. Here, I'll show you. There's actually DTCP.com. There's actually a website devoted to the digital transmission of copy protected data. DTLA licenses. DTLA is, by the way, the people who also license MPEG-4. Licenses the digital transmission content protection technology for standard and HD audio-visual content. The DTCP2 technology also for enhanced video formats, such as 4K, 8K, and HDR. So it's possible you would want to investigate that file. Maybe there's some 4K content in there. There almost certainly is not in the TTS file. That's going to be HD at best. Both DTCP and DTCP2 enable consumers to enjoy their content digitally networked throughout the home and remote locations and can facilitate consumer time shift recording to external devices. So there may be content that requires, you know, it's some content creators may require the use of DTCP and those files. So there may be some DTCP-IP files on your hard drive that are not duplicated in TTS. Those would be files that perhaps the network or the movie maker said, well, you can't distribute this without content protection. So that's what this is. More than 130 licensees worldwide and support from motion picture studios. So that's exactly what's going on. This is the motion picture industry. So you probably have a movie in there. But, you know, as long as you don't burn a DVD and sell it on a blanket in your front lawn, I think it's okay for you to watch it. You just need a DTCP player. CyberLink has a soft DMA, DLNA player that might play it. Yeah, if you Google around, you can see some stuff. It may be difficult to play because it is, after all, a copy protection standard. They're trying to keep you from playing it. Yeah, a Handbrake could certainly read the TTS files. I don't know if Handbrake could take the DTCP files. Apple engineers its own downfall with the MacBook Pro keyboard, according to Kyle Weens at iFixit. It's Apple's own downfall. Line two, Ricky, San Diego. Hi, Ricky. Leo Laporte.
Leo, huge fan. This week in Google, MacBreak Weekly. You're amazing.
Thank you. Two of my podcasts that I do every week at the Twit Network, twit.tv. Thanks for the plug.
I can't support you directly, but I do support your sponsors.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, the support directly I kept alive because sometimes people want to give us a tip and so forth. That's how I thought I would pay for a podcast network back in 2005. And then I realized that wasn't going to work. And so we started doing advertising, just as we do on the radio show, and that works great. So no donation needed. Thank you.
Well, since Ring got acquired, I'm sure you got a fat check from them, right?
Oh, I wish, huh? Don't you wish? This is not unusual. In fact, it's not our first sponsor to do so well advertising that a big company picks them up. Amazon bought Ring. Apple just bought Texture. And yeah, we never hear. PillPack is the latest one. We advertised PillPack. Yeah. Helped build them up as an online pharmacy. Now Amazon bought them just this week for $1 billion. I don't think I'll see any of that. That's okay.
I've got a question, a Sonos question for
okay,
you.
Good. I wish I'd get some of that Sonos money because we talk about them a lot.
Yeah, right?
I have given them far more than they could ever give me. I have probably a dozen Sonos speakers.
Well, we've loved Sonos. It's been great for years, but all of a sudden, about a month ago, we started having some connectivity issues with the app with regards to Pandora and all the different services, XM Radio, all this. And now it's actually gone to the extreme where any Sonos device that's connected to our router or our modem will cause the entire network to crash.
Yep.
I have reached out to Sonos as well as my internet provider and both kind of point the finger at each other. But the common theme seems to come back to channel, issues with channels.
It's even more complicated than that. So as you probably gathered, Sonos is a kind of a funny wireless speaker system. The chief advantage of Sonos, besides being wireless, is you could have speakers in many rooms, and they can go in party mode, or they can all play the same song, and you don't get echo or delay or anything. Somehow they're magically in sync. And the way Sonos has historically worked is you would use Wi-Fi to configure them and set them up, but then they would establish their own separate network, which was not kind of quasi-Wi-Fi, but it was at 2.4 gigahertz. It was out on the Wi-Fi band. And this has been the cause of numerous issues. One of the Sonos becomes the Wi-Fi, or the, I guess I'll call them Sonos Wi-Fi access point, and all the others join it. You may have noticed Sonos sells something additional, the Sonos Boost, which is its own access point. Doesn't have speakers attached at all, but does connect to your network. Because obviously Sonos still needs your network to get out there and get Pandora and Spotify and whatever you're streaming. So it's really a device with two different networks. And I've had similar problems to you. This is not unusual. I went out and got a Boost. Then Sonos changed their firmware so that they could create their own network and wouldn't need to be you wouldn't need to connect them to the internet. And in my case, that fixed it. But I think for other people, it caused problems.
So I did end up going out to purchase a Boost because after a lot of Google searches, I came to the conclusion that maybe that would solve all my problems, but unfortunately, it doesn't appear to be solving the problem.
Yeah. So one thing I for some reason it's working now for me. And as I said, I have Sonos in every room. I have so much Sonos. And remember, the other problem is we have I don't know how many Wi-Fi devices you have, but I guarantee you it's more than you had 5 years ago.
It's
out of control. I have 60 devices on my Wi-Fi. So that's another source of issues, is just Wi-Fi itself is broken these days, right? So what I ended up doing, and I've done it several times, and finally somehow it sticks, was actually unpairing everything.
Okay.
I took the Boost out, and I don't use the Boost now. I unpaired everything. You want one and only one Sonos device connected to your Ethernet. You don't have to these days, but I think that's still a good idea. Do you have one connected to your router?
Now, when you say one connected, you mean connected directly by Ethernet?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Yes. So I have the Kinect. So what I...
Kinect is fine. That's what I use. I have a Kinect connected to the Ethernet. Okay. And then the Kinect doesn't have speakers. It connects to your stereo. That's fine. But one and only one. No more than one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's key also. That's where the Boost was. You know, that was the one device connected to Ethernet. But you don't have the Boost, you connect to the other device. But don't connect two. Only one connected to Ethernet. Then start over. Delete everything.
Okay.
Unpair everything. And it's a pain in the butt. And I had to do it three or four times. I walked around. And my guess is that the Sonos adapts to the network. Now, I'm also using, and this might have fixed it, the Eero Mesh Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And that might have also helped. Really, it's an issue of Sonos coexisting with your Wi-Fi. It's not riding on your Wi-Fi. It's coexisting with your Wi-Fi.
So one quick follow-up to that, and then I'll let you go because I know you have a lot of callers. I have 3 amps for wired speakers that in the home. I should also keep those disconnected, correct?
Yeah, you can use a Kinect. You can use a Kinect, but it should be a Wi-Fi connected Kinect, not an Ethernet.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's one thing you will definitely cause this kind of problem if you have multiple Sonos devices connected hardwired to your network. Only one.
Okay. Okay. I'll start from scratch. And can I factory reset those? I'm assuming there's some sort of hardware factory.
They don't. It's hard to find, but there's a reset button on every one of them.
All right. Perfect.
Yeah. You know what? I found that that worked. I think it redownloads the firmware. If you look on the Sonos site, you can find this thing. There's a button press sequence to redownload firmware. I did that, and it eventually all worked, and I haven't had any problems since.
So I used to work for my father-in-law in IT when I was in high school. It was my first job. And came to the conclusion that about 80 to 90% of all computer issues were fixed with a hard reboot.
Yes, that's exactly true. If you ask any IT guy, they'll say, yeah, reboot it three times.
Yeah.
So there's a guy in the chat room. He says, I know this one. We're a home integration company in L.A. We deal with this all the time. He said, reset all the units, hardwire one unit, then add wirelessly one at a time.
Okay.
That's essentially what I just told you. It's just a nice step-by-step. So, and it is valuable to understand that you're going to start with that hardwired unit and everything else is wireless. And do the full reset, which you'll have to look up because it's different on different kinds of Sonos devices. But there's a way to reset it. And to my understanding, that actually re-downloads the firmware. It clears it all out. And that may also help.
All right.
Good luck.
Sounds good.
Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
It is kind of a, you know, there's a technical term we use in the business. It's spelled K-L-U-D-G. Now, I call that a kludge. I've heard people call it a kludge. I think it's a kludge. But either way, it's an ugly baling wire, spit, chewing gum kind of a setup. It's not clean. And there is, it's interesting, even programmers will say this, there is something about when you look at something and it's clean and straightforward, it's just going to work better. And the way Sonos works is a little bit of a kludge. So sometimes just starting over and trying to make it as rational as possible, for some reason that seems to work. Oh, Joy has a great question in Santa Cruz. I'll answer when we come back. What is firmware? I'll tell you when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech Guy Show is brought to you by IT. We've mentioned firmware several times now. And it's true. You need a paperclip for one key reason. Reset holes. So I keep one paperclip on my paperclip magnet. It's also a floppy disk degausser. I saw Ray Charles sing that in person one year. Never forget that. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. I used to do Live with Regis and Kelly back when Regis was on the show. And I used to go back a few times a year, show him the latest gadgets, that kind of thing. And one time Ray Charles was on, and I'll never forget it, because I would go in the day before the show for rehearsal in the afternoon. And Ray pulls up. Big black limo. He doesn't go in the green room. Didn't go in the, you know, backstage area. He just would stay in the limo till it was time to perform. And then his chauffeur gets out, his bodyguard gets out, and they walked him onto the stage. And it was a rehearsal, and he played this song. I was there with my daughter at the time. I think she was probably 8 or 9 years old. And she had no idea who Ray Charles was. I said, just, honey, just listen. Just listen. You'll remember in the future. Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful man. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here's some good news. You remember the Equifax breach? The company that has all of our information, our social security numbers, every loan, every credit card, our home address for years. Remember them? And then remember that they got breached and they didn't tell anybody about it and all of that stuff? Maybe you also remember that right before they told the world about the data breach, three executives, a month before, sold stock totaling $1.8 million. Yeah, the president of U.S. Information Solutions, the CFO, Chief Financial Officer, and the president of Workforce Solutions, all at Equifax, all three of them dumped at least $250,000 worth of stock a few days before the company announced the problem. They said, well, we didn't know. We just, well, you know, we're just taking a little money. That's all. And in fact, Equifax's own internal investigation said, no, they didn't know. No insider trading then. Well, somebody has been charged with insider trading in Equifax. Not them. Not the senior management. No. Actually, they did charge the chief information officer with insider trading in March. Okay, so this guy is an IT guy, former Equifax manager. He was designing a website. He's a software engineering manager. He's designing a website. He was told by Equifax it was for a customer impacted by a data breach. Not us. Oh, it's not us. But as he designed the website, he realized this is us. And he then purchased some put options in Equifax. And a week later, Equifax made the announcement. The stock went down 14%. He sold and netted more than $75,000. Now he's being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. The CFO? No, he's fine. You know, Equifax ended up paying, as far as I know, no fines for that breach, and in fact made money on it because they referred people like you and me, pretty much everybody. They referred us to a credit monitoring service, which is free at first, and then they charge you for it later. And so they've ended up making money on this. Hey. Robert is next on the line from Bakersfield. Hello, Robert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Love your program.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Being a good fan, listening to all your the stuff that you talked about. You talked about an Epson 8550 a while back.
Yeah, they're our sponsor, I should mention, just for clarity's sake. Yeah.
I went and bought one.
Okay.
And it's black and white. It's wonderful. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But when I try and print color on it, I'm having a problem with it because I get all these lines.
So this is a problem sometimes inkjet printers have where nozzles get clogged. And so where there is a clogged nozzle, you will see a line across the printout. Now, there's there's a routine in there to both check the printouts, look for alignment and clogged problems, and then for unclogging the nozzles. Sometimes it's so badly clogged that you have to run that routine several times. Have you tried that?
No, because I don't even know how to get to it.
Yeah, it's in the menu on the screen. It'll either be called nozzle cleaning or head cleaning, but you certainly there is a little routine for doing that, and it'll unclog those nozzles. Epson, you know, the EcoTanks, you don't replace the cartridges, you don't replace the print heads, and so I had some concern that you might see more clogging, and Epson tells me that they have a special coating on those print heads that reduces clogging. But as with any inkjet printer, if you don't use it over a long period of time, nozzles will get clogged, and so you'll have to run that nozzle cleaning routine. But it's built into the firmware of the printer, and so just go to the menu and go to setup, and go through the setup, and you'll find some maybe it'll say maintenance. I think it does. It says maintenance, and in there you'll see a nozzle cleaning, nozzle checking, all of that. And that raises the question Joy in Santa Cruz asked in our chat room, what is firmware? And to understand what firmware means, it's really kind of a play on words. You have to go back to hardware. Now, everybody knows what hardware is. You go to the hardware store, right, to get hardware, wrenches, pliers, things that are hard and that are sold. They're wares. So hardware stores, right? When computers came along, of course, computers have hardware, too. They have the keyboard, the mouse, the case, the processor, all that's hardware. But they also have software. Now, software is a play on words, too. There was no software until computers came along. But software is the program the computers run. And it's called software because it's not hard. It's just bits. It's data. It doesn't exist at all, really, except, you know, as ones and zeros on a hard drive. See, hard drive, software. But what's firmware? Well, it's not hard and it's not soft. It's in the middle. It's firm. And it's an even further play on words. It's a play on software. All computers, almost all devices have firmware. It's software, usually operating system software, that runs the computer. It's generally not modifiable. It's stored in an area of the computer that stays there even when you turn it off. So it's kind of like hardware in that it doesn't ever go away. but it can be modified. So it's kind of like software. You can update your firmware. So, for instance, we've recommended this before. If you have a router, you want to update that from time to time, right? Get the latest fixes. So that's taking the firmware, the stuff that's kind of semi-permanent, and updating it as if it were software. It is. It's technically is software. It's just software stored in an area that is non-volatile. It doesn't go away when the computer's turned off. Your memory, your RAM, when you turn off the computer, the RAM goes away. But non-volatile memory is usually reserved for firmware. So it's not soft, not hard. It's firm. Does that make sense? Did I answer the question? And there's lots of ways to store firmware. Programmable read-only memories. Electrically erasable programmable read-only memories. So there's PROMs and EEPROMs. There's erasable EEPROMs. They erase usually with ultraviolet light. Yeah, the old EEPROMs, they'd have a little window on the chip. And if you shine ultraviolet light into the window, it would erase the programming. So I'm glad you asked, Joy. I use that term all the time, and it may not, you know, unless you're a geek, probably doesn't resonate. But I think it's easy to understand when you understand hardware, software, and then firmware. Hey, have a great Independence Day for those of you living in the States. If you're in Canada, happy Canada Day today. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, for playing some patriotic music. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for answering your calls. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you right back here next time. Meanwhile, have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.